Greetings, every soul. This is Christopher Rudy for Cosmic Love, July 17th, 2010, and it's my great honor and pleasure to introduce Tony Petronovich, the Doctor of Metaphysics, International Metaphysical Minister, and she has the website Sacred Spaces. If you're coming from the Cosmic Love webpage, I highly recommend you take a look at her website. She has an exceptional weekly newsletter on her website that you can sign up for. No charge for that, and it's on the subject of sacred spaces. Tony, are you there?
I am here, and I just wanted to make a little shift in what you just said. Yeah,
okay.
The easiest way for people to get to me is through a portal I've set up called youaresacred.com.
Okay.
And that has all of my websites, and then you can choose which website you're going to, because... referring to is Sacred Spaces, WA, and it's just hard to remember. Yeah, youaresacred.com. That's the way to get there.
Youaresacred.com. And Tony's got some really interesting videos you can look at on the subject of the sacred spaces. We're going to be talking today about this process, what's going on, of global awakening of our DNA, this process of sometimes referred to it as the evolution revolution from the inside out. And Tony's had some really exquisite experiences on the subject, or videos on the subject of zero point, what's going on with the converging of energies in consciousness, the here and now. Tony, I'd like to have you just go right into it, what you're doing with your websites, your intention in this regard, and kind of the big picture.
Well, what I'm doing is actually teaching. And the easiest way to teach, obviously, is through something that you can listen to and you can look at the same time. Some people are visual learners, some people are auditory learners. And so a video, obviously, it has both included. So it makes it really easy for people to learn things that might appear really complex, because the idea of DNA, which you and I had been talking about earlier today, and paradigm shifts and things of that nature tend to sometimes shut the mind down, especially one person told me, oh, I did really poorly in biology class. Don't talk to me about that, you know. So it's kind of like going back to the schoolroom and saying, no, not that. And yet, if you take a moment to realize that all you have to do is sort of define the words and they will all explain themselves to you quite easily, what you realize is that where we are right now as a species is in a learning curve, and it's all based on coherency, which is the wavelength that, you know, where everyone's talking about vibes and vibrations and frequencies and wavelengths, and coherency means that the wave of you, the frequency that you're vibrating at, all of your cells, all of the troughs and crests are equal. And when you're coherent, you know, like when you say somebody's incoherent and you can't understand them,
uh-huh.
Well, actually what you're saying is their frequency is so off that you really can't understand what they're saying. And when we're coherent, when our wavelength, the troughs and the crests, the up and the down, is equal, then we are literally, and I mean literally, scientifically, open to all information that exists in every frequency domain everywhere.
Now, that's what I understand, a function of heart coherence. Is that correct?
Heart coherence.
Heart.
And it's the heart that literally creates the coherency in your body, because it's the strongest electromagnetic organ in our body. It's 5,000 times more electromagnetic than the brain.
And,
so,
and what I understand is that, we've had actually shows on the subject before regarding the concept of heart math and coherence.
Yes.
And the understanding that the heart rhythm, and actually when this is when a person is in the frequency of love or in the consciousness of love, is actually a golden ratio algorithm love is the golden ratio algorithm of the heart rhythm. There's an actual frequency.
Yes.
Horowitz says it's 528 hertz or whatever.
Yes.
That frequency of love is an actual golden ratio algorithm of the heart rhythm, the rhythm itself, the 3-4 rhythm of the heart.
Uh-huh.
And that's fascinating to me. And what you're saying is that frequency, actually, and that heart congruence, or that coherence. You're saying that that is has profound effects for the DNA also. I mean,
it does because the DNA and the genes in the old science, you know, back in the more like Newtonian science.
Uh-huh.
The world has believed, and there's still a lot of people and scientific institutions that still believe that the DNA and the genes are sort of a mechanical process that are just set to function in a specific way. In other words, somebody will say, well, I can't help, I'm fat. I have fat genes. I have, you know, the fat gene from my family. Well, what's been proven through epigenetics, and Bruce Lipton is really the leader in that field, is that the genes and the DNA are waiting for instructions on how to express, and they express based on the environment. So you might have a fat gene, but unless you place yourself in the environment, i.e. eating a lot of fat food, to make it express, you're not going to gain weight. And it goes for diseases or anything else.
We talked about this earlier, how we shape our environment, our mental environment, and then it shapes us. Or, you know, there's an interchange. And that subject fascinates me. How and Greg Braden talks about this a lot. You know.
Yes, he does.
About this the frequency of holy compassion.
Yes.
You know, creates its own momentum, and of course, there's an ongoing issue with our habits or our momentums. You know, moment to moment of thinking and feeling, and how they tend to recreate themselves. You know, we shape them, and then they recreate us.
Right. Right.
And,
yeah, it's kind of like a Mobius strip, you know, just going back and forth and back and forth. And we're the determining factor, we being consciousness. Our conscious awareness is the determining factor.
Oh, I noticed that's a subject in some of your videos, and that we are co-creators, you know, of our, you might say, of our own reality, and we have free will, and anything is possible, and that's kind of a theme in your new newsletter I enjoyed reading today.
Right.
Anything is possible. You've got a really unique way of getting past a lot of the habitualized groupthink we have about thinking about spiritual subjects. And I really appreciate that about your work. In your videos, like you say, your audio-visual orientation, some people get it visually and some people get it through the audio. But I'm really intrigued with your work and what you're doing with the medium.
Well, it's a little bit of a soapbox for me because I feel that to a very great extent, the quote-unquote, drum roll please, New Age light worker, you know, harmonic convergence, blah, 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 groupies are doing a real disservice to what can be accomplished by making such an emphasis on it has to be this way, we have to do this, I have to follow the spiritual path, this guru told me this, this book told me that, and all of a sudden they're right back where they said they didn't want to be.
That's right. I call it formulaic salvation. You just do this formula and you'll be saved.
Yeah. And to believe that it has to be that way, like today is supposed to be the conscious convergence of something based on the Mayan calendar. Okay, great. The Mayans are wonderful, then the calendar is what it is, you know, and I have my own belief system about that. But this email I received said, this has to be done today, and the entire world must participate. Now,
what
did we just say?
That's very interesting, the woulda, shoulda, coulda aspect of creating a prayer field of expectation and anticipation and how to create a significant emotional experience by believing it's so.
Exactly, yes. We've created it. We've decided today's the day, and this is what we're all supposed to do. And it really doesn't make any difference whether the whole world does it or not. There's a bunch of people that are going to do whatever they're going to do, and wonderful. And that will amp up. It will increase the frequency of all of our consciousness.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that we all have to do it.
Yeah, this is the only way.
Yeah, this is the only way for it to be done. And I spent a great deal of time, and I must admit that I get a lot of pleasure out of it because I know that what we're talking about right now, you listeners, you know that you feel the same way we feel, except that it's scary to go outside and color outside the lines because your group isn't going to like you anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Your group think, you know, you're stepping out of the box, and you don't you don't fit your own BS belief system.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And once you allow yourself, I got an email today from somebody who had studied with some other people, and I'm not going to go into names and stuff here, and they had this real issue about trying to figure out what the void meant. And I'm reading this email going, oh my gosh, no wonder the person can't figure out what the void means. Everything that they're saying to me is based on a belief system that somebody has handed them and said, this is what it means. And that's what I told the person. And I said, look at this. Look at these words you're using. You don't know this is true.
Well, I think the issue of collective humanity at this point is look at the words we're using and the script that we're following and where it's getting us and what choices we have.
Right, exactly. And that's why I keep going to the possibilities of everything. And this is a huge one. This is a big, you know, if you want to try this, give it a go, but it's a big one. If we step out of the idea of trying, underlined, to perceive what is in our mind, or as I like to call it, our image screen. If every time we bring up a perception about something, we make that screen blank, we begin to dissolve all of the perceptions about our belief systems, and we're left with no thing. And that in itself, even saying that, is a perception. And yet, if we do that with our consciousness, we open the door to the cosmic consciousness, universal knowing of everything, because we don't have the blocks up that say, well, wait a minute, it doesn't fit into this that I believe is true.
Yeah. In other words, the greatest opposition to the full spectrum just being in the presence of light of God that never fails, or, you know, whatever you'd want to call it, the greatest opposition to that is our habit of thinking not. or the habit of thinking that you know, and sometimes I put it in the context of self-esteem and self-image. You know, self-esteem is a feeling about ourselves, and self-image, you know, is the way we see ourselves.
Yes.
And there's just that what gets in the way of just being fully present with the sense of I am, I can, I will, and by God's grace, done deal. What gets in the habit of that God presence, or, you know, divine love presence, is the habit of thinking I'm not worthy, or I'm just a human, you know, I'm just a human.
That's all. Right. Yeah.
Just a human. I'm only human. So, you know, I'm not human. I'm not God love or whatever.
Right.
And that sense of limitation becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, to the point where it's the greatest opposition. Or what does Jesus say, that the greatest enemies will be of your own household?
Yes.
In other words, between your own ears.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
And it's fascinating, you know, how all these different maps of consciousness that are out there, and belief systems, which I sometimes, you know, jokingly way refer to as BS, you know, for short.
Yeah, right. Oh, me too.
That it's amazing how, you know, the biggest obstacle to the path of spiritual progress, evolution, whatever, you know, is that habit of thinking not, you know,
yes.
I'm not, I can, I won't, or, you know, I you know, it's not a done deal, and that it's going to come in the future, or it's going to come when I pay my bills, or achieve these things that will make me, so to speak, make me happy, but I'm not there, you know. That way of thinking about, you know, I am my body, and my body's not perfect, or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think you know, this thing of the Mayan calendar. I was reading a thing on it today from the Prophets Conference. You know, this I don't know if you get the information on the Prophets Conference.
I know what you're talking about.
They have, you know, all these different experts who are saying, you know, that the Mayan calendar is, they're convinced, and they're going to hold to their guns that the Mayan calendar is going to end on you know, in 2012, you know, the mm-hmm. classic date. And there's this Johan Kalman, you know, Johan, you know, the Swedish guy who's saying, mm-hmm. and, you know, this unity convergence thing that's going on, you know, that it's actually, we're celebrating it now, but it's actually in 2011 and not 2012 when the Mayan calendar comes to an end. And I'm thinking, you know, here's a classic case of the battle of the BS of the belief systems.
Oh yeah.
And I kind of applaud, you know, the idea. You know, we need to think about it now, the unity convergence thing, as far as what's going to be going on later in the fall, and maybe 2012. I really kind of like the idea that there's people trying to direct our attention more to the here and now. You know,
well, anything we're going to experience in 2012, we've already begun to experience. And
that's right.
It goes back to that old, you know, news phrase, if it bleeds, it leads. All love and respect to the Prophets Conference. They're just one of many, many conferences out there. If
yeah.
there isn't something that makes people go, oh, my God, I have to do this, they're not going to put
right.
their money into the
That's
pockets
right.
of the people who are saying, okay, this is what's going to happen to you. Please follow what we're telling you to do. Instead of realizing that we are in emergence as a species.
Yeah.
And it's emerging
yep.
now.
And I refer to the emerging blueprint for a golden age because
yes.
it's the process of emerging that defines the emergence.
Yes, exactly.
And it's to me it's like this whole process of that goes on with focusing our attention on different issues,
uh-huh.
And that the real currency, you know, the real currency of the internet age. Is attention. And, you know, the expression, you know, pay attention because attention pays, that a lot of these movements are really trying to get people to pay attention to their movement at any one particular time and using
right.
whatever a significant emotional experience that they can bring to the public as far as creating a wave of attention.
Yeah.
And I like the concept of this unity convergence that you know that's going on right now today, you know, with this Johann Kallmann's thing, and they're trying to create the idea that this is a new harmonic convergence that's going to be going on in through this next year. I like the concept of that we are inadvertently, inexplicably going into a nonlinear right brain. Spherical consciousness that's truly spiritual, or, you know, the Divine Mother principle.
Yeah.
The Divine Mother as far as unconditional. No, it's non-linear. It's unconditional love.
Yeah.
And I really like that message and the momentum of that. And I got to admit that I've kind of played into that with some of my former shows and emails just with the idea of, you know, whatever it gets to, you know, the Where you put your attention is where your God is, you might say.
Yes.
If consciousness is sacred, then where you put your attention is where your God is, and attention pays with God consciousness.
That's
you
right.
know, if it's well qualified.
Yeah.
And the concept of a unity consciousness or unity conscience or unity consciousness, conscience convergence, is in process, and we need to pay attention to the process. I, of course, have kind of use that myself as far as the process itself. There's a method to the madness,
mm-hmm,
and there is
mm-hmm.
a sacred space with the geometrically ordered divinity or geometry of divinity or the geometric spaces that are thought forms for the expansion of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of spherical consciousness, which is, you know, nonlinear consciousness, is it is unconditional. In a sense, it is the void because it's beyond form, it's formless.
Right. Right.
But the formal consciousness, the linear left brain, letter of the law, logic from the linear consciousness, that does not compute.
No, it does not.
And so I'm fascinated with, you know, the idea of framing, you know, the processes with pure geometric thought forms that are really like the right dynamic, round magnetic, and radiant energy, you know, those three energy fields within fields are like all energy in the universe are a function of right dynamic energy fields, round
mm-hmm.
magnetic energy fields, and radiant energy fields that combine with fractal geometry and all through all creation, through all nature, and are kind of epitomized in the golden ratio. And you've go into that very well on one. I can't remember which video it is, but it's one of the videos you provide on the website. And And I believe it's on zero point and the zero point phenomena, which is really the spherical consciousness, or, you know, the zero as a circle.
Yeah.
You know, that process to me has been, I mean, I know what's going on, and I know it's in process, and you've expressed it very well on your videos on your that are linked on your website, and I'm fascinated with the subject of orbs, which you go into, and the consciousness, the intelligence of these light orbs, because I've been seeing pictures of orbs, and I've been involved with organizations that have this whole thing of orb intelligence, and how orbs are appearing all over the world, pictures are registering them, people are seeing them. And this concept of that there is intelligences of all kinds, and they're manifesting now at this time, because the veil is thinning and people are being able to see, beyond the veil, and perception is changing, and people are awakening or otherwise becoming aware of this no time, no space, this nonlinear presence or intelligence. That people are hearing voices. They hear voices anyway, but it's amazing how with this process of the thinning of the linear, the veil, you know, the lockstep linear letter of the law, there is the spirit of the law is coming through in all kinds of ways, and it's one of my delights with synchronicity and just finding people like yourself in the unique way that. that we connected over this last week, that to me is the fruit of this process, and I guess it comes back to pure attention that focuses attention on this ascension process in terms of an upward mobile thrust of consciousness that has pure intention to become aware and. Transcending the ego is an ongoing process. You know, the linear consciousness that has a habit of framing the nonlinear in ways that are less than spiritual.
Yeah, I know. That's true.
So I really applaud your work with your websites the thing with orbs. What is your perspective on orbs?
Well, I find them to be dear friends. I became aware of them before anybody really knew what they were. There was a website that I stumbled upon, you know how that happens.
Oh, yeah.
Back in 1998 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a website about orbs put together by a young man, and it's not up anymore, and I don't have any way to even try and retrieve it. And he was talking about seeing these orbs coming through what he called a rip in the fabric of space, that he had been told within himself to go and sit on this mountainside, and he was in Vermont or someplace back east, and to wait for something to happen. And he went and he did it, and he brought a camera with him, and he actually took a picture, and he got it. He got a picture of this kind of, it was a rip. It wasn't like a hole. It was like a tear. And that these orb beings, these, you know, round spheres were coming out of this, and that they told him that they would appear any time, any place he called them. Well, being an industrious young man and maybe just a little bit Pollyanna-ish, he decided that he was going to take this information to the president, to the pope, to all the leaders of all the countries, and he was going to change the world. Well, obviously that didn't happen because he didn't get, you know, passed for a space, and all of a sudden the website was gone. But what I did was when I read that, I thought, because I'm always open to all possibilities. As far as I'm concerned, there is no such thing as can't or not or no. So
right.
I thought, okay, well, if they all appear to him, they'll certainly appear to me, and if they can show up anytime, any place, then great. So I had a meditation group going on Wednesday nights, and during the meditation group, I didn't tell anybody about this. I just got the group together, and everybody started their meditation. And I started mine, and I said, okay, light orbs, whatever you are, come visit me. Here I am. I'm wide open. Let's go. And boom, all of a sudden, in my mind's eye, I saw three light orbs within my mind. And they began to talk with me and to tell me things that I knew I did not know about.
Yeah.
The way the universe is constructed, how things work, blah, 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 blah. So after the meditation, I was just enthralled, and I said, okay, thank you very much for your appearance. I now know you're real, at least for me. You can leave now. And they said, oh, no, no. Once we're part of your environment, we're here to stay. There's much more to come. So I said, okay, fine. Well, time passed, and I began seeing them then in rooms in my house. I saw them all over. And in 2004, I was at La Push, which is on the Olympic Peninsula, which is it's run by the Quileute Indians. It's a beautiful resort, and it's my favorite place to go and be on the ocean.
Uh-huh.
And I was there just, you know, really relaxing and enjoying the ocean waves and breezes and what have you. And all of a sudden, there were light orbs everywhere. It was like being immersed in this big jello bowl of light orbs.
Was this in the evening?
It was in the evening, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Why did you ask me that?
Well, I just wondered if it was, you know, you actually see the orbs in the daylight or in the trees or in the
woods.
Well,
I've seen them in both, but this was in the evening. It was like early evening. And
uh-huh.
They were just everywhere. And so I said, okay, hi, what do you want? This is bigger than a bread box. What's this about? And they said, we want you to be our transmitter. We want you to talk for us. And I said, well, what does that mean? And they said, well, you do soul readings. You see people's souls, and you record readings for people, and you tell them what you see. We want to do the same thing, but we want to talk through you, and we want to express what we see of people, if they want us to do that. You know, I mean, it's not we're going to thrust ourselves on them. And
so
I
you
said,
do
well,
orb readings.
So now I do orb readings. But the thing that was interesting is I said to them, well, this is nice. We can look at this. But I need to know more about you because I really don't know what to say to people when they say, who are these beings? And they said, we are the guardians of your soul. And I
so
said,
the orbs like, are orbs are like guardian angels.
Well, yes and no. Yes, from one standpoint, but no from the standpoint of, like, you know, people think that they each have a guardian angel. Well, you don't have, like, a guardian orb. It's a collective intelligence that has a collective consciousness. So they are the guardians of our souls as a group.
So it's like the principle of Elohim as a group soul.
Yes, exactly.
It's a kind of like an Elohimic... It's like an Elohimic consciousness of divine love or hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
So it's that concept of that concept of the Elohim, you know, of the plural name of God that is it's always fascinated me, and I know the Elemental Kingdom, you know, relates to that very very closely, you know, the concept of a plural energy of which sounds to me like the orb intelligence is kind of like the language of the angels, but angelic presences, of course, like the anchoring of that, the anchoring that there's more an individualization of that group soul in,
yes.
in specific angels.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't know, I'm getting it. That's kind of an abstract concept, I'm really fascinated with that concept of orbs as a group intelligence.
Well, the thing that was interesting, and this just takes us into a different, and again, I stay open to the realm of possibility, so here we go. So I took this information, I posted it on my website, and I said, okay, I'm going to do this. It wasn't 2 weeks, and a woman that I do not know in Canada emailed me, and she said, hi, my name is such and such, you have brought me peace. And she told me her story. And the reason I brought her peace was because she has... Like, you know, like some people have two families, like they have old kids and then they have younger kids, depending upon how many times they got married. So she had a son who was like, you know, young man, had left home, gone off to do his thing, got married again, had a little child who was just really an unhappy being, always crying, never sleeping, always having issues, problems, just not fun. Well, older son came home a few years before all of this happened for me, and he came home like around Christmas time, and as soon as he came home, the baby stopped crying. And the baby just got to be this really happy, wonderful, sleeping, lovely child. And while he was there, he said to his mother, I've been having some visions. It is time for me to leave. I am to become a guardian of the soul. And the next day he committed suicide.
You're kidding.
And she took pictures from that day forward of the young child as he grows up, and every picture that she sends me, he's surrounded by this enormous orb that follows him everywhere.
Really?
I mean, I can send you the pictures. I've got them. And she said, the woman's wonderful. She said, you can do anything with this information. You can publish it. You can talk about it. Just, you know, don't use my name and tell people where I am. But because I need people to know what happened. She said it was so enormous. I mean, and there's no way you can miss this orb. This orb is, like, huge, and it's surrounding this little boy. And just last year she sent me a picture, and now the little boy is, gosh, probably 12 or 13. And now he doesn't have this huge orb around him anymore. But as a young child, when he needed, quote-unquote, protection, like when he's walking on ice, when he's in a boat, when he's sledding, he's doing things that, you know, they're fun, but they're potentially harmful at the same time. He's got this huge orb all around him. And then right outside her house is a huge orb, and getting ready for the funeral is this huge orb. And she said, do you think that this is my son? And I said, well, I can't say yes and I can't say no because I don't know for sure, but it sure looked like it to me. And what was interesting was that he had said those words to her. And
yeah.
So when people say to me, can the eye orbs be disembodied souls? I cannot say no. Though
yeah.
The light orbs have never told me that they are, the ones that I communicate with, there's the potential that there's a whole other phenomena happening here as well.
Do the light orbs go into explaining, like the messages from Matthew, the whole nature of what's going on in nirvana or the spiritual octaves?
Well, sometimes they do. They're pretty pragmatic.
Uh-huh.
And I read the original Matthew book. I haven't kept up with what Matthew has said since then.
Uh-huh.
But I really enjoyed the original Matthew book. The light orbs tend to be really pragmatic, and they tend, and maybe it's also, I haven't even asked them about that, actually. Because when people ask me to do a light orb reading, they want to know about themselves. You know, everybody's,
yeah.
you know, interested in themselves. So they talk about the person from their viewpoint, which is absolutely non-judgmental. It is totally unconditional love. They're very pragmatic. They're funny as can be. I mean, they say things that I would never say in a million years.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they nail it. They nail
yeah.
it every time, you know, and it's amazing.
Well, that's fascinating. I mean, and your story was very poignant for me. I had my oldest son by my first marriage. I was killed in an auto accident about a month ago.
Ooh.
And my son Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
And about a week after that, my son Gabriel, Patrick's younger brother, gave birth to a. His wife gave birth to a small boy,
mm-hmm.
healthy boy, and the boy he's got this extraordinary presence about him, just an extraordinary for a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
yeah.
just some kind of people look at his picture and he looks like he's 6 months old.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
he doesn't look like a newborn.
Right, right.
And I'm you know I and different people you know when my son Patrick was. Killed in an auto accident, you know, talked about there was different aspects of, from what I could read on it, that perhaps his soul contract was up.
Uh-huh.
And it's like he was having premonitions of it, and his girlfriend was for some time, and he even, about him dying in a car accident, to where he actually went out and got insurance on his car to cover his funeral expenses in case he died of an auto accident.
Wow.
And there was enough... things like this that, you know, I understand that sometimes when a person's soul contract is up, they're going to die one way or the other, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that it's not foreordained or etched in stone. You know, there is a free will factor. However, some factors are immutable. It's not, there's exceptions to the rule, but you just can't make the exception the rule as far as being, you know, the timeline being etched in stone, or, you know, that's why it's
mm-hmm.
difficult to prophesy or, you know, with a specific timeline on anything. But anyway, I was really fascinated with your story because I had just a sense, and Patrick was really had a strong, strong presence of unconditional love, and he was kind of uncomfortable in this life. I mean, he was a musician, but he was also an auto mechanic, and he had an auto mechanic shop, and but he was a he also was like one of the sponsors of the baseball. Like this was his field of dreams in this area,
mm-hmm.
and he had
mm-hmm.
six teams that he sponsored, and he was president of the Montana hardball, you know, young adult hardball league.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his own team. He was coach of it, and he played all of pitcher, catcher, first base, third base. He was really, you know, he coached his team and they won, you know, the last 4 years. They won the league the last 3 years, but he also sponsored the entire league and he was president of the league. And all these baseball players turn out for the entire league and they have an arch of baseball bats, you know, I'm carrying the caskets down through and I'm just losing it, you know, emotionally.
Yeah.
And, you know, what does this all mean? And your story, and, you know, I'm wondering if this was like a bunt or a sacrifice play where Patrick's soul contract was up and he's overshadowing this new soul, you know, that's just coming in. You know, his brother's son, and I don't know, there just seemed to be like a synchronicity with that. And of course, I'm all making this up in my head, but who knows?
I'll tell you what. I have a mechanism. I call it my click, and it's not a click, but it's the feeling that happens in my solar plexus when something is the truth, no matter what anybody thinks about it.
Uh-huh.
And when you were telling me that story, it came on so strong that it's almost, I mean, it's in my throat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so strong that that you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. And
because it's unusual for souls to reincarnate quite that fast, and yet that doesn't have anything to do with anything.
That's right.
It's not important.
He could still be a sponsoring presence.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah. Ooh, how interesting this is.
Yeah, and so that's been kind of my drama the last month or so.
Wow.
And it's just
how old was
he? He was 33. He was 33. His baseball jersey was 33. There was an umpire that stood up at the funeral and just wanted to share that, you know, Patrick was 33. His baseball jersey was 33. And he wasn't Jesus Christ, but he was the Christ to me. And he went into stories of unconditional love that Patrick had expressed to him and had expressed to the baseball players of his team and the whole league in a way that's just, this was his field of dreams. And this was, baseball was a way to connect with people with this unconditional love and nurturing, this nurturing of this field of dreams concept of a spirit. There was a real spirit. I mean, when you saw him play and others play, he was like an inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when the way he played with others and things that I saw when I watched him that were just like amazing. I mean, and it there was a spiritual for a person that's physical oriented, or you know, I mean, with the game and the idea of a physical expression of. What is it? It's not how you play the game, but whether you win or lose, but how you play the game, and that
mm-hmm.
spirit of what a good sport is in life. You know,
yeah.
There's an expression there, and then for a lot of people, sports is their field of dreams, and for
uh-huh.
a lot of people, they're just armchair sports fans. But you know, Patrick was in the arena, you know, and he was out there playing with them, and boy, they just loved him, you know. And there was this unconditional love that he shared with people in the shop. And this umpire was saying that he'd go in the shop anytime and listen to Patrick. And Patrick would listen to him. He would stop working or continue working, and he always had time. He said he always had time, and he said he'd give me anything I wanted or anything I needed. If I needed money, he'd give it to me. He said, but it was kind of interesting, you know, that. I didn't know this guy was going to speak. It was kind of an extemporaneous thing, and it really got me thinking about Patrick, you know, as I hadn't thought of him, but he was always that unconditional, and there was a music. He was really a competent musician, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really very good on the guitar, and he used to sing and play guitar in coffee shops in California. But he went to mechanic school and was a mechanic. And he fixed people's cars and all his friends' cars and helped them with their cars. And so it was like, you know, where the rubber meets the road is, you know, is your vehicle, how you get around. And
yeah.
He was like a sponsor of people's vehicles. And the people came from all over the valley that he fixed their cars, and they loved him so much. You know, and it was just amazing that he had a chance to demonstrate, you know, and maybe it was, you know, that this was his way to demonstrate that there's a lot of expressions of love and unconditional love, and there was such an outpouring of that love, you know, at the funeral in a way that, you know, gee, you know, all those baseball players from the league, you know, holding up their baseball bats in an arch, you know, honoring Patrick as he came down through the, as they carried the casket down to the gravesite. I mean, it was just like, I mean, it's a kind of experience you never look forward to, but at the same time, you know, there's a presence there that, with people and an outpouring of love that you really get the sense of, this guy touched a lot of people's lives. And there's just a lot of expressions of love that come through in a lot of different ways. And the orb thing to me is like there's an intelligence in those orbs. I know there is. You know, from everything I've read about them from the very beginning, that there's an intelligence. Light has intelligence, and that energy light is a carrier of frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been reading a lot about the 528 frequency. You know, I used to be Len Horowitz's communications director.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah, that was a trip. That was an interesting trip up in San Jose, or not San Jose, Sandpoint, Idaho.
Uh-huh.
Back about the turning of the millennium, about 2000. Yeah,
okay.
I was up there for a summer, and really interesting experiences with him. And you know, he's really into frequency medicine, frequency energy.
I have his books, yeah.
And we went to see Joseph Polillo, you know, that chiropractor that wrote the book on the healing codes, the biological apocalypse.
Yeah, right.
Have you read that book?
Yes.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
I mean, it's really, well, we went to see Joey Polillo, and there's quite an interesting story there. How I got there, and he told me when I got there, you know, Yeshua told me you were coming.
Uh-huh.
Of course, that kind of knocks me off my, you know, I'm just,
yeah.
I said he did.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at him. Of course, that night we were up to about 2 o'clock in the morning talking, just me and Joy, and it was like there was something he wanted to share with me, and I wasn't sure what it was, and we got into a conversation and got into, you know, the quantum reality and what he's doing with energy, because he uses the energy healing devices.
Mm-hmm.
And the experiences there with that night, and I went back alone another time after that, once I knew how to get to his place, and he invited me back. And the understanding of that, number one, Yeshua is alive and well.
Yeah.
and Joey has, if you read his book, you realize that he's got a point where he has an ongoing conversation with him, or, you know,
uh-huh.
And there's no question in my mind that he does, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the proof is in the pudding in this guy's life and in what he does with healing people with incurable diseases, you know, that come from all over the world, you know, to live with him. I mean, these kind of things go on. I mean,
mm-hmm.
For some reason, I have a life just full of meetings with extraordinary people. You know?
That's wonderful.
You know? And your story is got to be, you know, right in my top 10 category. You know? I mean, I really.
Yeah.
I love your work and what you're doing. I can't tell you how much I'm really excited to hear your story on the orbs, which I've been tuning into, and how they carry energy and light and frequency and a presence.
Well, one other little piece that I can add to your story about Patrick, as you're
uh-huh.
telling me this story, my nickname in high school was Willie Mays.
Willie Mays?
The Giants?
Yeah.
Baseball player.
That's cool.
And I was at his game when he hit a home run after 16 innings in Candlestick Park.
Whoa.
And won the game. And
oh my,
my
God.
Name was Willie Mays. I was baseball in high school. That's what I was.
Really? That was your field of dreams.
Mm-hmm.
That was your field of dreams. Baseball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Keep your eye on the ball.
Keep your eye on the ball.
Yeah. And
that's what I put at the end of my newsletter this week was, pick up your bat, hit the ball, and don't look back.
Well, now it could be keep your eye on the orb.
Yeah, keep your eye on the orb, exactly. Well, they say they're round. They tell me they're round. They say, we are round like Teflon. We are round because nothing can hold on to us. Everything slips off of us. There is nothing that can attach to us. We are like your Teflon.
I like Teflon. I love the movie Sphere. Did you see that, Sphere? The movie Sphere?
Sphere. I think
it's called The Sphere.
Sure.
fear, and it was about this this giant. Well, it was a movie. It was kind of a UFO movie, but it wasn't like the UFO spooky movie. It was like this UFO mystical movie in this sphere that, you know, this underwater sphere that was like obviously you know, extraterrestrial. But there was a lot of elements of the, you know, what is spherical consciousness that's truly spiritual. And that's one of my favorite metaphors. You know, in the spiritual geometry, you know, the metaphor of the circle or the sphere, it's really the concept of what is nonlinear consciousness that, you know, the left brain linear consciousness just can't grasp.
Right. And they can't grasp it because you can't grasp the sphere.
Right. You can't grasp the sphere. So I'm fascinated with the orbs and the sphere thing because there is an intelligence there, and they're trying to tell us something about the nature of zero point, this nonlinear consciousness that we're moving into, and this shift is matriculating the matrix of this linear left brain logic, letter of the law, which is largely Western civilization is you know, highly left brain. And it's moving to more of an Eastern, a nonlinear, spherical spirit of the law.
Uh-huh.
And that spirit of the law is unconditional love. And
yes, and
you can't, you know, there's the thing about unconditional love, even saying unconditional love, you can't get your mind around it. Because the mind is left brain, or more so, you know what I mean? There is an intuitive knowing.
Well, you have to stay open to everything.
That's right. There is an intuitive knowing of what full spectrum unconditional love is.
Uh-huh.
There is that, and of course the right brain is more intuitive knowing, and the left brain is more logical knowing. You know,
right.
But the logical knowing tries to frame, you know, the nonlinear.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and the nonlinear.
Right. It tries to make sense of it. Yes.
It tries to make sense of it. So,
right.
And of course, the synergy, the best of both worlds, is when you're a co-creator, both left and right brain, and you can really comprehend knowing gnosis, you know, the Gnostics, knowing wholly from the whole brain.
Yes.
Not just left and right brain, but upper and lower brain. Seth, I think I'm just going to continue on through for the end of the show. So we've still got 10 more minutes.
Okay, good.
Rather than have a meditation, but most of the people who listen to my show have heard that meditation before, and this is really this concept of wholeness is something that comes through your work a lot. The subject of wholeness, and I try to frame it with the understanding of there's a linear logical, you know, left brain, and there's a nonlinear spherical holistic oriented right brain. Best of both worlds is a synthesis that's greater than the sum of the parts, directed by free will in the moment to moment and here and now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the meditation I really wanted to you know, finish up the show with, is that there's a whole that's greater than the sum of the parts, and that the components to the capstone is really a sacred space where we frame the best of both worlds. The linear and the logical, and through free will choice, we take the moment and frame it with just not only our memory, our habit of framing things from the past. You know, our own memory body, which is more of a linear frame of reference, our, you know, the blueprint that we have for perceiving reality, and then there's the increasing momentum I think that's going on right now towards zero point on the planet, to where there is a spherical, you know, spiritual, holy, healthy, holistic consciousness that is beyond the linear. And it's like everyone's in an ego transcendence or transformation process right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the mediation of this process is the meditation, the ongoing meditation in the here and now, from moment to moment. And as a meditation or a mediation, that process is what I've been trying to do with geometrically ordered divinity, or the geometry of divinity, or spiritual geometry of framing the reality of the moment, and to realize with real eyes the dynamics or the emerging blueprint of a golden age through a holistic, holographic, holy, consciousness in the process.
Yes.
And of course, you can't legislate morality, but you can create an environment in which that presence or conscience can thrive. And the surviving of the soul is the thriving of that conscience, especially in this dense octave of incarnation that we consider reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this density, and we've got something to work against, which is the great opportunity of the present. You know, if we were only in the light right now, with the light beings, we'd take the light for granted because that's all there would be. And I guess that's kind of messages from Matthew or Susie Ward. That's her explanation of nirvana, is that there's only light, or you know, we're in the light, and your field of dreams there is whatever you want to create. Here we have something to work against. You know, we're in a dense octave. There is a level of density here that we have something to work against. There's a challenge, and because of that, an opportunity for more light, easier and faster, to the extent that we have pure intention, unconditional love that focuses attention. And to me, that focusing of attention is the framing of the unconditional, we might say, with the alpha principle, which is the conditions of love. There's the unconditional love and the conditions of love, if you know what I mean. The linear logical understands conditional love. That's the patriarchal momentum of the last 2,000 years, and we're moving into a matriarchal dispensation,
mm-hmm.
Which is the unconditional. So we're balancing, I really believe, where the whole movement to the zero point is to the spherical consciousness from the linear patriarchal consciousness. The Divine Mother is emerging, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I want to honor you for bringing that presence to the show, and your message is really that message, as far as I can see, is the Divine Mother emerging, or the Holy Spirit. I really like your story on the Holy Spirit, and I hope people go to your website Daughter of Jesus, or...
Oh, Daughter of Jesus, the Daughter of Jesus website,
That's a wonderful website.
Thank you.
So I guess we're going to have to do a wrap. We're getting to the end of the show. Is there anything you'd like to finish up with for a few minutes?
I would like to, and people, if you're listening to this and it interests you, I want you to write this down so that you don't have to fumble around when you get off of the show. The website I want you to use of mine is the Sacred Spaces website, and that's www.sacredspaces.com. And I want you to go to that website, and I want you to click on the Presence, which is in the left nav bar, and I want you to read what the Presence is, and then I want you to click on the PDF that's attached to that page, and I want you to read the story of how the light orbs brought into my conscious awareness the essence of the presence using synchronicity and the blue spiral over Norway to show me that everything has different meaning. I think it's very important. I think that Chris, for you, what I'm telling them to do is to go and to look at an initiation process that I was given by the whole light beings, who are the light orbs, and they use the blue spiral over Norway to show me how it works.
So we go to your website and go to the
link presence.
On the presence.
This is the presence, and then and it explains the presence, and it's just a short explanation. And then there's a PDF that's attached to it. It just says, "Click here for the PDF of the story of the presence," and you just click there, and it'll pull up the PDF. And it is the story of what happened to me within a 10-day period that was so synchronistic that it was like being caught in a tsunami wave and just blown away. It was just one event after another, after another, after another, and they said, "Okay, you've got it, see it, do it."
Wow!
It was amazing.
I had one experience like that I have on my bio website called "On the Path," where a synchronicity experience that was so off the chart. And it really began my life's work. This was about 40 years ago, 35 years ago. I mean, it was just it's just so beyond, you know, like the invisible hand of God kind of a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no way that you can have a logical answer for any of it. It's impossible.
That's right. and the knowing of it is so tangible that there is, Well, Tony, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
And
look forward to doing this again.
I'd love to do it again.
We'll keep in touch, and we'll do this on a regular basis.
I'd love it. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Tony. And that's a wrap for today at Cosmic Love, and we'll be back here in a couple of weeks. So thank you, everyone. Happy trails.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Tony.